This is it. The legendary live band, Phish, returns to the road this summer. Phish. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at livenation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.
Hello, everybody. It is Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, Assistant Sports Editor for Multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And joined for our weekly Zeiss is Right video by Paul Zeiss of the Post-Gazette. We're going to be talking Steelers over-under individual props for the upcoming season. They're out at some sports books, so we're going to kind of go over, you know, where we think those individual props are going to go. Not for gambling purposes, just for analysis of specifically this this Steelers offense. We're also going to talk a little bit of Pirates. Paul has been active in some Pirates trade conversations this week, a little bit of reporting from our news hound here, and then a little bit of, you know, throwing out there the possibility of the Pirates possibly trading Mitch Keller. So we're going to get into all of that. Before we do, just want to thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, Pella Windows and Doors. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. All right, Paul, let's get into these over-unders. The first ones I'm going to throw at you are from FanDuel. Always a great time of year to do this because there's not a whole lot of news. But we still, you know, are looking to analyze where we think things are going to go here. So I'm going to start with George Pickens at FanDuel is listed currently at over or under 975 receiving yards. Paul, obviously, he went over 1,000 yards last season in Matt Canada's offense. He went under in his rookie season. He went under that number. And obviously now you have the Arthur Smith offense coming in. There's a lot of question about how many balls there will be available to catch, how many, you know, receptions, you know, might be available. How do you look at a prop of 975 on George Pickens? I'm going to go over because I kind of have a hard time thinking that this offense is going to look particularly good if you go under 1,000 yards with your number one receiver.
Yeah, I mean, if he stays healthy, I don't understand. I mean, I can't see him. If he's less than that number, it's not been a very good year for Russell Wilson and company. So, I mean, the wild card, anytime you bet one of these futures bets, anytime you bet one of these things where it's over under a certain yardage or a certain touchdown total or whatever, a lot of it is dependent on health. But when you're a receiver, it's also dependent on the quarterback and, you know, how well the quarterback plays. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Russell Wilson is going to be at least decent. I don't know if he's going to be great. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, overly spectacular. I think he'll be an upgrade over the mess that they had last year. So, I mean, I feel like George Pickens, as long as he's healthy for, you know, 15 of the 17 games, I can't see him going under 975. So if you're asking me, you know, not that I would engage in such activities, but if you're asking me which way I would bet, I certainly would probably bet the over on 975. I feel like if Russell Wilson just is decent and, you know, I mean, again, you went from maybe one of the worst offenses, at least schematically and, you know, play calling wise in NFL history, to a guy who at least is competent, is a former head coach, whose offenses, you know, are efficient, if nothing else. You know, I mean, if you look at the numbers Ryan Tannehill put up, and I don't know that Ryan, I think even at, you know, 97 years old or whatever Russell Wilson is, he's better than Ryan Tannehill is on his best day. So I will go over with George Pickens because I think that if he's not over that total, it's a really bad sign for the Steelers.
Yeah, what do you say about the offense? Just because I see a lot of people say, well, it's a run-focused offense. And again, it, to me, like, it comes off as people – I think I've said it on this show before. This is not Navy's offense. They're not running the triple option. There's going to be – you're going to have to be able to pass the ball in the NFL. I mean, does the offense enter into your thinking at all?
No, I mean, I love all of the discussions about the offense. Just like you said, like it's going to be, you know, like they're going to like this is going to be the Army Navy game every week, you know, but it's not. They're going to throw the ball. Ryan Tannehill threw for a lot of yards in Tennessee when he was in this offense. I think that the other thing that people aren't taking into consideration, as we've said how many times on this show over the course of the last 6 months, you basically have George Pickens, especially after they traded Deontay Johnson, you basically have George Pickens and five guys named Mo. And I'm not sure Mo isn't the best of the five. So at the end of the day, I mean, I no disrespect to Calvin Austin, you know, training camp warrior for the last 3 years, or who else they've got, Van Jefferson, or Kez Watkins, or, you know, the dude they got from Atlanta, another just sort of nameless, faceless receiver. I mean, who else is Russell Wilson going to throw the ball to? You know, and Pat Freiermuth, okay, good. He's a tight end that catches the ball. I'm sure they'll throw it to him, but he gets hurt so much, I don't know how many games he's actually going to be able to play. And then, you know, there's just not a whole lot else to really look at. I can't see really any scenario where George Pickens is healthy and he doesn't get at least 1,000 yards receiving. If you show it to me, I'm going to tell you if that happens, the Steelers either rushed for like 3,000 or 4,000 yards or something crazy, or they missed the playoffs. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I agree. Let's get into Najee Harris. Pretty low prop here. I think it was, looking here, 775.5 on FanDuel for the over-under. Obviously, he's been a 1,000-yard rusher every season. We can debate what that 1,000 yards means, but are you surprised at that number being so low given, you know, the focus that is expected to be put on him this season?
Well, I mean, I think that number is a product of the fact that people, you know, expect him to split carries with Jalen Warren. And, you know, at that, you know, what's that, 775 and 0.5? I mean, what's yeah. Jalen Warren's is probably similar. So,
Bet Online AG, which we should mention, is offshore and unregulated, lists Jalen Warren at 600.5 for his over under.
Okay. Here's the thing. You were talking about basically 1,300 yards between the two of them. Again, much like George Pickens, if they only rush for 1,300 yards between their two starting running backs, it's a really, really bad sign for them. It's a bad sign for the team. It's a bad sign for the offense. You know, I don't know who's going to be. I feel like Najee Harris is still going to be the featured back. So if he's the featured back, I mean, really, they play, what, 17 games? He's the featured back. If he rushes for 50 yards a game, that's 850 or something, isn't it? I mean, I feel like he'll have a couple of the stinkers where he rushes for 20 or 25, but he'll have a couple that he rushes for 100, 110, 115. So, again, I go back to with these prop bets, if it's Najee Harris over 775, if he's healthy for, you know, 15, 16 of the 17 games, he better be over. So I'll pick over because, you know, I feel like the offense will allow him to rush for more yards. But more importantly, he's going to get enough carries that if he doesn't hit that total, again, it's a bad, bad sign for the Steelers.
Well, I think, you know, I'll be surprised if the split is quite that severe, Paul, where it's close to 50-50 with a slight nod to Najee Harris, because I think they're invested in Jalen Warren's future, and they're, at least at this point, they're not signaling that they are invested in Najee Harris's. So you wonder if they're going to, you know, kind of run the tires off him before they let him get to free agency. I mean, that's the way things look now. Maybe Najee Harris gets his extension, it changes the conversation. But I'm going to guess he goes over just because I think he's going to get more than just like a 50-50 or maybe 50-50 or 55, you know, 45 split, because the Steelers are incentivized to kind of keep as much tread on Jalen Warren as they can.
Yeah, I mean, but again, I still think, you know, if they both could, you know, I think they both could rush for 800 yards, right? That wouldn't be out of the, you know, realm of – I think that is well within what they were what they're capable of. I think the other thing is, especially early in the season, they play some bad teams. And you know Mike Tomlin, if they get leads in the second half, they're going to run their wheels off. So, you know, to me, I think that those are probably, I would say Pickens is over and Najee Harris is over are two probably that I would say definitely. Now, the rest of the offense, there's a whole lot of questions about, but I think, you know, Najee, if Najee isn't over 770, if he's healthy, it isn't over 775, and Pickens isn't a 1,000-yard receiver, that's a really, really bad sign for the Steelers. In fact, if you told me that right now, that both of those guys are healthy and didn't hit those over totals, I'll tell you right now, the Steelers are not a playoff team.
Yeah, I tend to agree, which, I mean, I guess begs the question of whether the books really think they are a playoff team. Let's get into Pat Freiermuth. We mentioned him at the top. Obviously, he has injuries, but BetOnline has his over-under at 50.5 catches. He still, despite the injuries, has gone over that number in two of his first three seasons. Last season was the one that he didn't. There was, you know, a general lack of interest in using the tight end. Would you say if he's healthy for 12, 13, 14 games, Paul, that he's going to have a pretty good chance to go over 50.5, especially in this Arthur Smith offense?
12 games, that would be what? That would be almost five catches a game. And first of all, I don't know that he's going to be able to stay healthy for 12 games. I mean, his concussions have started to add up. He's got always some kind of injury that, you know, bangs out his legs, his leg, his knee, his shoulder, his concussion, his this is one that I probably am going to go under on. I don't know that he's going to play enough games. I don't know that he's going to stay healthy enough to play enough games to get that many catches. So I'll go under on that one, actually. If he plays 13, 14, 15 games, yeah, absolutely he'll go over 50.5 catches, especially in this offense. But I just don't think he's going to be able to stay healthy and play enough that he's going to be able to get to that number. I also think that, you know what, we're going to probably see some of those tight end targets go to Mount Washington and some go to Connor Hayward and some actually even go maybe to like – Najee Harris out of the backfield, or, you know, as almost like an H-back type situation. So I'm going to go under. I'm going to say he's going to have under 50.5 catches. I just think that he's not demonstrated that he could stay healthy, especially in the last couple of seasons here, which is one of the reasons why, even though, you know, they're really high on him, I don't anticipate they're going to give him a second contract.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think especially your point about the other tight ends, you know, I think the Steelers are excited about some of those guys, even like Rodney Williams. You know, they're kind of talked about as a group. So it begs the question of how many targets are going to be available, especially if there's naturally fewer targets because of the offense, and especially if the offense is working, right? If it's not working, then maybe I might say, yeah, he'll sail over. But I think in the ideal world, you probably don't want Pat Freiermuth getting too many targets, because that would probably mean you're behind in games. You're throwing the ball more than you'd like. You know, if you're throwing it 25 times a game, how many of those should be going to the tight end, and how many is he going to catch? Right. I agree with you, Paul. If it's five a game, I think that portends some bad things for the offense. Any more on the Steelers, Paul? Any thoughts on the Cam Sutton situation before we move on to the? I have one more after this, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the caveat.
This is it. The legendary live band, Fish, returns to the road this summer. Fish. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at livenation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
And all of this is, if they go out and trade for like Brandon Ayuk or somebody like that, it probably changes these numbers a little bit. But as we sit right now, they obviously don't have him and they haven't traded for him. And so George Pickens is going to be their number one receiver and, you know, yada, yada. But if they make a big deal for a guy like that, obviously these numbers would change. As for Cam Sutton, I mean, the Steelers knew he was going to get suspended when they signed him. I fully 100% believe that this was a case of Mike Tomlin throwing a guy that he's friends with or that he's familiar with or that he really likes and respects, throwing him a lifeline, you know, similar to what he did to, you know, Brian Flores when he basically saved that guy's career by bringing him on as a defensive assistant in the midst of him suing the NFL and risking being blackballed. I mean, the one thing, Tomlin is very loyal. And so they went into it with their eyes wide open. They knew he was going to be suspended. As far as all the other stuff, I mean, I don't know what's right. You know, I wrote a column about this the other day. I don't know what's right or what's wrong when it comes to signing a guy after he's been in trouble with the law. All I can say is the law offered him a diversion program where they can make this whole thing go away if he completes his program. So if they're going to give him a second chance, I don't know why Mike Tomlin is, you know, if anyone would criticize Mike Tomlin for giving him a second chance. As far as what the impact he has on the field, I mean, obviously you got to find somebody to play slot corner for 8 games, but I don't know that it's that significant.
Yeah, Chris Carter and I talked about this on Wednesday's North Shore Drive. I'd like to see some of these other guys step up, and I'd like to see Cam Sutton be more of an insurance policy for this defense than the plan itself. You know, Darius Rush, Corey Trice, Beanie right. Bishop. You'd hope one of those guys steps up and seizes that slot corner role so that, you know, Cam Sutton becomes a luxury when he comes back rather than the guy you need for this defense to come together. Paul, let's get into the Pirates. Before we do, just want to thank another sponsor, Pitt Johnstown. It's a Pitt quality education with up close and personal learning. Top ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News and World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available. Located on 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining. It's a vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. All right, Paul, you reported yesterday that the Pirates are in on Taylor Ward from the Angels. Not a great batting average, but he's got a little pop, 14 home runs. I guess, what do you know, and what is your read on whether this is a deal that you'd like to see the Pirates make or not?
Well, it's certainly, you know, I mean, again, they've inquired about him. They, you know, I'm told that they've gotten to the point where they've talked about, you know, what the return would be and all the other stuff. So now it's just a matter of, do they make the deal or not, or do they get a deal done? I mean, Adam, this is, you know, now that we've gotten through all these pipe dreams and flights of fantasy about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and, you know, every other great player that's out there, the Pirates are going to trade for him. And, you know, okay, now we've gotten through that. This is the kind of deal they're going to make, right? A guy who's got a little bit of pop. He's an upgrade over the vast wasteland that they have out in the outfield right now. And he's controllable for a couple of years. That's what they're going to do. They're not going to go get a rental player. They're not going to go get somebody that's going to cost them a bunch in capital and prospect capital and stuff like that. I mean, he makes about $4 million. So they'd be on the hook for about $2 million. Don't be surprised if on top of that, we see them move Martin Perez and maybe even a Chapman and whatever to get some of that money off the books. But this is the kind of deal they're going to do. So we'll see if it gets done. If it gets done, you know, now all of a sudden you could take Michael A. Taylor, or as I call him, Michael B. Taylor, or as some people call him, Michael DFA Taylor. You can take him, right, and tell him, listen, you are now our eighth and ninth inning defensive replacement guy, and we will never put a bat in your hand ever again. That's what you could tell. You know, that's what you could do with him. I think that they're committed to Sawinski in center field. If you have Reynolds and Sawinski, and you know, I'm assuming they're going to, you know, put the new guy in right, whoever it is. Yeah, I mean, that it's a deal that makes a lot of sense. sense to me because it's a position of need. And quite frankly, I cannot believe I'm saying this. And man, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm starting to believe that Joey Bart is good enough at catcher with the bat that they don't necessarily need to go do something like Jacob Stallings or one of those kind of moves. And I mean, I've never seen anything like Rowdy Tellez at first. Is a guy that a month, you know, 5 weeks ago, everyone was running him out of town, booing him every time he did anything. And now he's like a fan favorite. And quite frankly, the way he's hit, you almost don't need to go do anything at first base. So, I mean, really, the position that you would want to upgrade is the outfield because you still have, you know, I know Oliveras was sent down. I mean, you got Connor Joe and, you know, Sawinski and Michael B. Taylor or Michael A. Taylor or whatever you want to call him, the way he's played, Michael F. Taylor. But I think that really they're looking at some of the guys that they were ready to move on from and the way they're playing. And it might be fool's gold. I don't know. But the way they're playing, it might be a situation where they don't feel like they need to upgrade at all. And so they go out and get, you know, somebody who's controllable, that's not going to cost a lot, that'll be a little bit of an upgrade. I mean, they need some power from the right side. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen. I know everybody's, you know, was all in on and excited about, you know, the idea that they were going to go get to some Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or something like that. But that was never going to happen. And the reason it was never going to happen is because it's the Pirates we're talking about. And they don't do things like that. Well, so we'll see.
I think the closer we get to Paul, I mean, when they were a half game out, I think it's a different conversation. When they're three and a half out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just, the further you get toward the deadline, the chance, you know, that you're going to make up a bigger deficit, I think gets lower. And I think lowers the threshold on the guys that you're willing to trade for. I think my frustration with Taylor Ward would be, I look at his stats and I think he's nothing special. And I say, how is it in 5 years the Pirates have not developed a guy who can do that? You know,
exactly.
That's the thing that bothers me is that you're giving up prospect capital for a guy who is of the quality that you would think that you could have developed in your own system. We're not talking about Vlad Guerrero here. We're talking about a guy who's got a little bit of pop, a nice player, but nothing special. And you know, if you're trading for those guys in year five of a rebuild, something's going wrong.
Well, I think what's really scary to me about Ben Cherington and company. And I could be wrong, okay? But I went around the diamond three or four times yesterday to make sure I wasn't when I was talking about this. Outside of Nick Gonzalez, who obviously is a very small sample size, but outside of Nick Gonzalez, is there anybody, any other hitter they have that's homegrown under the Ben Cherington era that has developed into anything that's worthy of anything to talk about? I mean, and Nick Gonzalez, again, I mean, we're talking about less than what, 50 games or 60 games or whatever he's played. I mean, he's a very small sample size, but he's hit the ball reasonably well. He's driven in runs. He's done some really good things with his glove. But as a hitter, you know, if you wanted to tell me that, okay, we got to give them credit for him. Okay, fine. But you look at it, I mean, around the diamond, you know, O'Neill Cruz, Cabrian Hayes, Brian Reynolds, McCutchen. Those are all Huntington guys. Actually, McCutchen is a Littlefield guy. You know, you have the catching mess where, you know, Henry Davis can't I don't even know if he'll ever be a guy that justifies them drafting him, you know, 1-1. So, I mean, that's, to me, if I'm the owner of this team, I'm not so much concerned about the record as I am looking at it and saying, okay, why do, for 5 years, you have basically stockpiled all of this talent in the minor leagues, all of these prospects you've stockpiled, and none of them have panned out, other than Nick Gonzalez, who you drafted in the first round, who was kind of a no-brainer.
And there's no impact. I think that's like you can look at O'Neill Cruz's numbers and say you can do with that. I think at shortstop, right? You can have that's fine. But then you look at O'Neill Cruz and his frame, and you look at it, how he hits missiles a million miles an hour, and you say, how is this guy OPSing in the low sevens? And it's all of these guys just feel underdeveloped, and it's not, it's, there's no stars in this group either. There's no one that looks like prepared to take a star turn either.
Yeah. Cruz could become a star. I think, I mean, but again, he's got to work on some things with his swing, because he strikes out a lot, mostly because he's got some real holes in his swing that pitchers are able to exploit. The interesting thing is, Adam, if you want to see a meltdown, and don't be surprised if this happens. What happens if we get 2 weeks from now and they're still hovering where they're at? What are they, like, four games under 500? Whatever they're at right now. Let's say over the next 2 weeks, I don't know, they go 7-7, right? So I think they're 44-48 right now. So now they're 51-55 2 weeks from now. It will not shock me if they trade basically all of the guys on expiring contracts. It won't shock me at all. And especially, I'll tell you this much, especially if Rowdy Tellez has another 2 weeks like he's had, would it shock you if they try and sell high on him and see if a team needs a power hitting first baseman whose contract is really cheap? I mean, I would include him with the two pitchers, Gonzalez and Perez and Chapman. I mean, I think all four of those guys would be candidates to be traded.
Yeah, and I think that's going to reveal a lot about how comfortable Ben Cherington is, and I think that's probably a better outcome than letting this guy, if, 7-7 in 2 weeks, then you're probably 5.5 out of a wild card, because you're assuming some of these teams are going to get it together, and the wild card spot is going to get further and further away from the 500 mark where it's been, for much of the season. So let's just say you're 5.5 out. This team's not going to overcome that. They haven't strung three wins together in how long. And so if you know that they're not going to overcome that, it would be natural to try to get some stuff while you can. I think the question is whether, Ben Cherington feels his seat is hot enough that he's going to start doing something desperate, like a Chris Archer trade. And I spoke about that danger in April, because, as long as they're within shouting distance, he can justify going after something, getting the fan base excited. But, in hindsight, that was, the nadir of the Huntington era. That's what really undid everything. I just wonder how hot he feels like his seat is, given all the things that we just talked about.
Well, but again, he seems like a very conservative guy when it comes to these trades. So I don't see him going out and trying to make a big splash trade, to be honest. I think he's almost arrogant enough to believe that his plan is working. That's the best. That's the scariest part about
it. I don't think it's almost, Paul. I think he is.
Yes. I really think that he believes his plan is working. It's why they won't, be creative. They won't be proactive. They won't go, hey, we're going to stay the course. We're going to wait. Again, as I always say, when it comes to the Ben Cherington era and the Pirates, okay, there's an old saying in the military, and that is, hope is not a method, okay? But their entire plan is based on hope. It's the hope that these guys that we have internally all get better. It's the hope that all of these young guys that are in the minors are going to come up and be stars. It's the hope that they're all going to stay healthy all at the same time, as opposed to, we need to be proactive. We need to go out and have a plan. We need to go out and do things. So as long as they're going to go with the hope method, I mean, we're going to sit here and have the same conversation every week when we do these videos. We're going to have the same exact conversation. The only difference is it'll be a week longer down the road, and they'll still be 3 or 4 games under 500. And quite frankly, in some ways, once it was clear that, that Skeens and Jones and Keller were cooking, a month ago, that's when it was time to start making moves, because the bottom line is, now you've wasted a whole month. And so if you go now and God forbid if they can't win the series against the White Sox, right? But then after the All-Star break, I think they come out with the Phillies, who, oh, by the way, are the best team in baseball, and the Cardinals, I think, are their first two opponents. So, you know, let's say somehow Milwaukee beats Paul Skeens today and they lose one of the games against the White Sox. They'll go into the second half. They'll be four games under. And now all of a sudden you got to play two of the best teams in baseball. And so to me, they've got to make sure that they almost have to sweep the White Sox. You know, no matter what happens with Skeens, you know, against Milwaukee in the final today, they've got to sweep the White Sox in order for there to be any chance that they're going to make any significant kind of moves. And I just don't think they will. I think the kind of move we talked about at the beginning of this is what they're going to do. A cheap, relatively cheap player who's not going to cost a lot in terms of prospects and who's controllable for a couple of years.
Well, we didn't get to the Mitch Keller talk at all. We still got some time before the deadline. We got next week. But anything you wanted to say on that real quick?
I mean, just real quick. I think people have lost their minds. I got attacked on social media because I suggested that they could trade him. And, you know, I'll get into it more next week as to what, you know, my reasoning. But at the end of the day, people forget his salary goes from $5 million this year to $15 million next year. And the year after that, it's $16 million. And the year after that, it's $18 million, and then it's $20 million. If you really believe the Pirates are going to make it to where they're paying this guy $18 million 2 years from now, you're basically smoking too much of that wacky tobacco. Okay? He's going to be traded before the end of this contract. Everybody knows that knows his paying attention. So to me, if you believe in Bailey Falter and Jones and Skeens and, what's my man from Clemson, Bubba Chandler and, you know, Brashton Ashcraft.
Anthony Solometo.
Yeah, Solometo and Oviedo and even Quinn Priester. I mean, you've got enough guys, right? And of course, that doesn't even take into account next year when they go out and they find the scrap heap guy that they get every year, the Rich Hill, the Martin Perez, the guy that's coming off an injury that they sign as a free agent to be their fifth starter. You're basically your rotation. You've got enough guys in your rotation that are good, and you got two studs at the top of it. So you take the $15 million that you're going to have to pay him next year. And you figure if you get to up to the trade deadline, you mean to tell me a team, I don't know, like the Yankees or the Dodgers or one of these teams that really is a legitimate contender and really needs a pitcher? You mean to tell me with that contract, which actually in the real world is very team friendly, but of course in the Pirates world, it's going to be too much over in 2 years. You mean to tell me you couldn't get a king's ransom for that, and including maybe somebody that can actually hit a little bit? I think you could. I think you could get some prospects. I think you might even be able to get, a couple of prospects that are top five type prospects in some of these organizations, guys that are right there on the cusp of being major league players. I mean, that would be a deal you're looking at actually trying to get better for next year. And I know everybody loses their mind because it's like, oh, he's one of our best pitchers. You know what? Look at how the Pirates operate, A. And B, he's at a position of strength. So, unless all these Baseball America nerds are wrong, one or two of those pitchers in the minors has to pan out, right? I mean, we keep hearing about Bubba Chandler, like he's Sandy Koufax. He's the second coming of Sandy Koufax. Guy, you know what I mean? So my point is you've got enough pitchers. But we can get into that more next week.
Yeah, my only doubt with that, Paul, is like I really look at what the pitchers they have. One was from outside, Bailey Falter. One's Jared Jones, who I'll give them as a legitimate win. One's Paul Skeens, who was an automatic, I think. And then, do I believe in Quinn Priester? Do I believe anyone else in this group is going to turn out to be better than Quinn Priester in the next 2-3 years? I don't know that I believe in Ben Sherrington's management regime enough. I think the thing I'd be intrigued by is, can you get a real legitimate big league bat, more of a baseball trade? That would intrigue me. But until I see who's available, hard to say. But, Paul, thanks for joining me this week. We didn't even get to some college football, some Penguins talk. But we got a few more weeks of summer here. We got plenty of time to talk about this stuff. So thanks for joining me, Paul. We'll talk to you all again next week. Like this video if you enjoyed it. Subscribe. And thank you so much. Always a fun conversation here with Paul on Thursdays.
All right, we'll see you.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
This is it. The legendary live band, Phish, returns to the road this summer. Phish. This Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Ruoff Music Center. On sale now at livenation.com. Part of the Coors Light Concert Series.